Mr. Clarkson, reel 19.
And I remember on one occasion we were going away to the West Indies, and this I was in the PO's mess then, and there was a load of this lot again. For instance, at Gibraltar, you couldn't go ashore. You had to go ashore and use the heads ashore, and it was impossible to use them without getting a dose of crabs, because they were used by the Gibraltarian workmen, you see. And I always remember going ashore in Portland before we left, and I was the representative, asked if I go, and went to a chemist to get this precipitated powder, which you just dusted on and bathed 24 hours after that, or 12 hours afterwards, and it was all completely gone. I always remember the chemist saying, "Oh, I'll never use anything else. Good stuff," he said. So evidently he also said. But the, and then scabies, that was another thing. Rather than go to the doctor and be penalised and have a long course of treatment, by doing it yourself, you could get it all over in 12 hours, I suppose. And on one occasion we had scabies. That was also at Portland. And there were six of us, I remember, out of our mess. We went ashore and bought some sulfur ointment. We took an oil skin each with us. We booked a bed in the sailor's home, which we didn't sleep in. We slept on the deck. We stripped off, had a bath the next morning at 6 o'clock. We slept in an oil skin on the deck all night, came aboard in the morning, all clean and pure. Where if we'd gone to the doctor, we'd been a fortnight shaved off, rubbed all over the... Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Can you tell me, can you think why the Navy, which must have known about these other ways, I mean, these more civilised methods, why they persisted with the...
I don't think, honestly, that they did.
Maybe they didn't.
I don't think they did. I'll give you another instance. When I was in the barracks, I'd been home from the Red Sea then about 3 months, and for some years I had suffered with a horrible bilious attack once a year, either one day in July or in August, and that left me wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, dreaming I was hanging head downwards and I was sick. I couldn't stand on my feet till 11 o'clock, and then I started to recover. I was all right after that. Well, in this particular case, I was in barracks and I was on draft to the Glasgow. Actually, it was only a harbour job, and I had to be down to see the doctor at 8:30. Well, I woke up ill that morning. I couldn't get out of bed. I was vomiting. And so eventually everybody else cleared off to their various jobs, and up came the messenger who said, "You're wanted down the medical inspection room." I said, "Well, you'd better tell them to, if they want me, they'll have to come up for me. I can't get out." I was, couldn't stand. And so I lay there till 11 o'clock, and then up came a stretcher party. By that time I'd recovered. I was able to walk with them down to the sick bay and see the surgeon commander, who said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "I understand you're on draft." And I said, "Yes, to the Newcastle." "Oh," he said, "well, where were you before you came in here?" And I said, "I was out in the Red Sea." "How long for?" And I said, 4 years and 2 months. "Good gracious," he said, "excuse duty." Now, he never examined me. He took it for granted that I was trying to escape the draft. And I wasn't. So away I went and played billiards and drank beer for 2 days, and then came back to see him again, and he said, have you escaped the draft?" I said, "I don't know." Well, he said, "Go and find out." So I found out that somebody else had been uprooted from the barracks, had been there about 3 years, and had gone on this job. Well, he said, "I think you could go back to duty now then." He hadn't asked me what was wrong with me. But while I was waiting there, there was a friend of mine, and he was a painter, and he'd been in barracks some time. And a Apparently the doctor couldn't make out what was wrong with him. So he said, I can't understand you at all, Samways. He said, I can't understand you at all. He'd been attending the doctor for 3 months. So he said, what are you, Samways? And he said, I'm a painter, sir. Oh, he said, colic, colic. The problem was solved. Now, that was one doctor. Another one on the Canterbury. I went to see him one day, and I had a terrible cold. And he said, what's wrong with you? I said, I've got a cold. That tells me nothing, he said. Tells me nothing. He said, what's wrong? I said, I'm running at the eyes, ears, nose. I said, I've got a terrific headache. Ah, now that's better. Now, that's the sort of treatment you get from them. I don't know whether what rights you had in that respect, if you had opened your mouth and remonstrated with the doctor, of course you were talking to an officer. But I did see that happen in barracks. They introduced dental surgeons, and they were classified, of course, as surgeon lieutenants, lieutenant commanders. And I went in from the Canterbury to have some dental treatment. And the doctor promised me that I was going to have a couple of false teeth. I'm very pleased about that. But when I got in there, there were six of these dental surgeons right at the top of the block. They all had their little place and their assistant. And there was quite a queue there waiting to see them. And all of a sudden, we heard a horrible noise coming from one of them, and it was the place where I had to go. And this was an Irish chief shipwright, Kelly. I always remember him. And he said, stop, stop. So he said, well, what do you mean, stop? He said, stop. He said, I am now talking as a patient to his dentist, not as a rating to an officer, and in my opinion, you're not fit to touch my teeth. I refuse to let you do anything further to me. And this dentist, he didn't know whether this was quite legal or not. However, Kelly got away with it. But I went in there the next one in, and he said, let me see now, what was it? I said, you were going to give me a couple of false teeth. I don't think it's necessary, he said. And that was that. But that, I thought that was a very good point. Doctor and patient. Not officer.
But the doctor, the near the officer patient routine was one that was cursory, it was humiliating, it was degrading even in some ways.
It was.
Treated you as just a, you know, you were assumed to be looking for ways to get out of duty, out of draft, for ways to get time off.
Yeah.
It didn't treat you as an adult, in fact, with a problem.
Oh dear no, you were something that he had sympathy for. You'd probably been chased around. They had an idea that if you went sick, you must be malingering. That was, and then if you were ill enough to go sick, what treatment did you get? You went straight away to the sick bay and started cleaning brasswork, polishing the floor. Whatever state you were in, you had to be dead before you ever went to bed. And so nobody ever went sick. They were frightened. And when you went into a naval hospital, I was in Hasler this is another time, 1922, I think it was a time of, it was a time, must have been later than that, when there was a lot of unemployment in the country, I remember. And I think it was Johnson Hicks, whether he was the fellow that cut the Navy pay down. They had a new system of pay, because after that, all the people who joined after a certain date were called Jixers. And I had a very bad dose of yellow jaundice. And I was on draft for China. Remember, the B And I was looking forward to that rather, up the Yangtze River. However, when I went up here, I've been very, very ill, and when I got before the doctor in the barracks, passing to go on draft, he said, "How long have you been like that?" And I said, "Like what?" "Have a look in the mirror." I looked in the, I was yellow as a guinea pig. I wondered why I'd been feeling sick for some weeks then, and off I went to Hasler. Well, I'd been over there for a couple of weeks, I suppose. I was gradually getting better, or I thought I was, and then they suddenly had a purge on. They had to reduce the Navy. And I think it was 57 a week they were going to chuck out of hospital, irrespective of what they had wrong with them. But they had to have an excuse. I mean, you couldn't just say, right, we don't want you anymore, you're out of the Navy. So they were going to discharge them on medical ground. And the result was that every morning, a surgeon captain used to come in and sit down at the desk and say, I'll have that one up there at the end bed, another one there, that one there. And so he'd pick out half a dozen. Remember, 57 had to go out of Hasler a week. And then they'd get these fellas up in front of them. It didn't matter whether they had ingrown toenails, ulcers, or whatever. They're all the same. He'd just tap them all over and then shake his head, say, "Well, I'm sorry, old chap. There's nothing much wrong with you. You could possibly live to be 100. But the fact is, you've got a fibrous lung. And as such, of course, you're not really good enough for the Navy." Now, Fallet, he couldn't see whether he had a fibrous lung. He never complained of his lungs, but he was recommended for discharge. And on the Friday, he'd be out in the cold, cold world. Well, you can imagine what that was like with some of us. I was waiting to get my long service and good conduct medal then. And I thought, I'm going to get humped out here. Right opposite to me was our ex-chief ERA of a ship I'd been in, the chief cook, and one or two more who were married men. There was a slump on outside and they didn't want to go out. They had a few more years to do. And so the result was when the doctor came around the next morning and said, "How are you this morning?" said, "Oh, can I go back to duty? I feel fine." But we didn't. And the result was that there were a load of us discharged from hospital for duty that should have been in bed. And the day that we went out, I'll never forget it, talk about the retreat from Moscow, we were helping each other down to the boat to get back to Portsmouth. I was ill for a fortnight. I went back to the mess and I thought, well, I've been discharged, I must be all right. So straight away I had a couple of pints of beer and a fish and chip supper and was violently sick for the next 3 days. So I spent 3 weeks on Epsom salts that they were giving me in the hospital. And the others were still creeping around there as if they'd as if they'd been well and truly battered.
Anything was better than getting thrown out in 1929. Well,
and another fellow in the next bed to me, he had ulcers, an able seaman, and he was frightened of going out. He was a married man. And at that time, there were two schools of thought amongst the doctors. For ulcers, the medical men reckoned that they could cure them. On the other side was the surgeons, who thought it was a much better affair to carve them up. But they decided that they weren't going to do anything about him. They're going to give him his ticket. And he pleaded with tears in his eyes, "Please cut me up!" And they did eventually, but it kept him in. Kept him in the Navy.
Can I just... that's fascinating. One other thing that's just in this context of illness, and it's tied into to life generally on board, is the question of venereal disease. What problem did that present? Or what sort of situation? How did the Navy deal with that exactly?
Well, they had some experts on that at Hasler Hospital, E Block. That was the great place there. But on ships, Of course, in Portsmouth, it was all right. They used to send them straight to hospital, and I believe they did have one, just a small amount of not-so-serious cases in the sick bay, probably in the barracks. But away from England, it was much different. For instance, at the Red Sea, Trinidad, we laid there for a long time, and there was one bar there, the American bar, that provided the hospital with quite a few cases. But they used to get it out there. Although I suppose America, there's more of a, to me then, there was more venereal disease in America amongst the schools than there was in the Navy. But if we were away on a long cruise in South America, you weren't anywhere where there was a hospital they could send them to. And so the numbers would gradually increase. You take a 9-month cruise now from Bermuda right down the East Coast, Falkland Islands for Christmas, and back up the West Coast, and then through the canal back. That was the longest cruise we'd done, 9 months there. Well, then we had, I suppose, about 20. Out of a ship's company of 400, mind you. We had about 20 there, and of course they weren't getting any better.